evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Thursday, August 29, 2024. Human Rights Watch is calling on the leaders of the rival Sudanese forces to hold errant soldiers accountable for abuses.
We are calling on international actors and notably the mediators who have been trying to organize talks between the parties in Geneva, for example, not to take these commitments at face value, but to make sure that there are mechanisms to monitor the enforcement of these commitments.
And communities in eastern Equatorial State are cut off after a vital bridge collapses.
This thing has affected community seriously because where the bridge is the central place of crossing.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Communities in Awinkibul village in eastern Equatorial State have been cut off from the rest of South Sudan after heavy rains washed away a major bridge in the area. A community leader says both state and national governments have done very little to intervene since the bridge collapsed earlier this week. The state government says it has no money to fix the bridge. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
Heavy rains on Friday washed away a life-saving bridge in eastern Equatorial State, cutting off communities in Awinkibul village. Atepi Bridge, which previously linked farmers from eastern Equatoria to markets in other parts of South Sudan and Uganda, has been the lifeline for communities who depend on farming for their livelihood. Albala Remy, the State Minister of Roads and Bridges, says his office has no money to fix the bridge.
The most likely thing that we are to do will be to write a document to the national government to at least give some support. The state has no money. The state is completely flat. That is the main challenge we have.
Okeny Ben Francis, a youth leader in Awinkibul, says some local residents have relocated to Uganda in search of service delivery.
The situation is very bad, really. Because some people are out the bridge, some in that side, some are that side. Those of that side, they don't have anything. Any grinding mill, fuel, everything is there, not there. The distance from Awinkibul to Uganda even is very far. Those people, they need to go to Grand and up to Uganda, almost 30 kilometers. The government, they're not doing anything.
Angelo Ringama, chairperson of the Panyikwara community, says the collapsed bridge has cut off residents from all nearby villages.
This thing has affected community seriously because where the bridge is the central place of crossing to their farmland, crossing to the military barrack, also to the school. And on this other side, they also have a health center. Schools are also on this side. But what has affected them most is the farm, because the farm is on across the road.
The United Nations estimates that more 5.4 million people are expected to face floods in South Sudan this year. Regional meteorologists predict an increased above normal rainfall between July to October that could force Lake Victoria to overflow the Nile River and affect dozens of South Sudanese communities. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move down west to Yambio, where health officials in Western Equatorial State say residents of Mvolo County are at risk of dying because some health centers in the area have no qualified doctors. Some residents say pregnant women and children are allegedly at risk in Mvolo. The chairperson of the South Sudan Doctors Union told this program on Wednesday that the country has 500 doctors delivering services across South Sudan. For VOA News, Mattia Samuel Timoteo reports from Yambio.
World Health Organization data shows that South Sudan has a doctor-to-patient population of 65,000. Some experts in South Sudan say this figure is well below the minimum threshold recommended by the World Health Organization. Western Equatorial State Minister of Health, James Abdallah, says Mvolo County does not have enough health workers. Abdallah says patients walk several miles to get access to health care.
The absence of the doctor from the county hospital is a threat, because that center before it could be approved, before it could be constructed and supported by CMB. Those people who are staying there are getting their health service from Mopodi, which is 27 miles from Mvolo.
According to WHO, South Sudan's healthcare system is in dire need of more workers, especially physicians. The country has only one medical school at the University of Juba College of Medicine, and there are no trained surgeons outside of the capital city. Mvolo County resident Lois Samuel says pregnant women and children often face huge obstacles accessing healthcare, adding that children sometimes die before reaching the hospital.
Children are dying when they are being referred to Lui Hospital. They die on the way. Even the drugs are not enough which can help our children. Sometimes the child lacks blood, but there are no doctors. The roads are very poor to transfer them to other hospitals. We are really suffering, especially now that we have no doctors in the area.
Ruben Amara, Mvolo County Health Director, is calling on the state and the national ministries of health to dispatch doctors who can treat residents of Mvolo County.
This is the only thing that will help us out of the situation.
It is the only thing which will take us out of this situation. As we speak right now, last week we lost a baby who was supposed to go through the cesarean section. Due to lack of personnel who are not on ground and lack of mobility to be rushed to a nearby hospital.
Jacob Abshok, another resident of Mvolo County, says there are no qualified doctors in the area. He says the government should intervene to address the health challenges in villages across the county.
Our people are really suffering when someone falls sick. There is nowhere to be taken to. The number of health workers in Mvolo is limited. There is lack of doctors in the area. The government should employ qualified doctors to come and work here in Mvolo, and they should be paid well in order for them to work.
The World Bank says most South Sudanese lack access to essential health services, safe water, and sanitation. The group adds that one in every 10 children dies before they turn 5, adding that the country has the highest child-to-mother mortality rate in the world. For VOA News, I am Matias Samuel Timatio, reporting from Western Equatorial State's capital, Yambio.
From Yambio, we go to Europe, where the chief negotiator at the U.S.-mediated peace talks on Sudan says breakthroughs for greater humanitarian access that were achieved in the first rounds of the negotiations last week are holding and expanding. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United States Special Envoy for Sudan, Tom Perriello, credits the breakthroughs on the Sudan talks to the commitment of delegates from Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the United Arab Emirates, among other participants, to alleviate the suffering of tens of millions of Sudanese. He says opening the Adre border became possible when negotiators got guarantees of access from the Sudan Armed Forces and the rival paramilitary Rapid Support Forces to allow aid to flow from Chad to Darfur. Similarly, he says negotiators in Geneva last week got pledges from the warring parties of guarantees of access across the Daba Road coming east from Port Sudan.
Both of those remain active and open now with dozens of trucks crossing, nearly 6 million pounds of food and emergency relief reaching areas in need. We need that to continue and to accelerate, and we are actively negotiating on a daily basis for additional expansions, including access through Sennar State into the heartland of Sudan.
Perriello spoke to journalists Thursday in an online news conference. He highlighted the importance of keeping these humanitarian corridors open, noting that many of the 25.6 million Sudanese suffering from acute hunger have received little or no assistance for months. He says a breakthrough also was reached on the issue of protection. He says negotiators were able to get a commitment on a code of conduct by the RSF, adding that the code has to be disseminated to all fighting forces by the end of the month. However, he says the Geneva talks failed to reach an agreement on halting hostilities.
We unfortunately see a lack of political will at the time for the parties to stop fighting and, in fact, are accelerating. And on that, and second, we have to find a way to get the parties together to find an end to this war that is leading to the suffering of millions inside Sudan, as well as spilling over increasingly into the neighboring countries.
While the RSF sent a delegation, the Sudan Armed Forces stayed away, citing concern at the Emirates' presence at the talks. The armed forces alleged the Emirates sent arms to the RSF, a claim the UAE denies. Perriello acknowledges the difficulty of reaching a peace agreement with the presence of only one of the warring parties. Despite this handicap, Perriello says agreements on humanitarian issues have been reached because he has been in contact with SAF representatives by phone on a daily basis. He adds nonstop negotiations to improve the desperate plight of the Sudanese people are continuing virtually with all participants. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Human Rights Watch accuses Sudanese rival groups of allegedly committing war crimes. Find out how after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The UN World Food Programme is investigating two of its top officials in Sudan over allegations, including fraud and concealing information from donors about its ability to deliver food aid to civilians. VOA's Philip Alexio has more on the probe.
Reuters is reporting that five sources they spoke with say investigators are looking into some staff at the World Food Program who might have tried to hide information about an alleged role of Sudan's army in obstructing aid delivery during the 16-month war with a rival paramilitary fighting for control of the country. According to Reuters, the WFP said allegations of individual misconduct related to irregularities in parts of the operation in Sudan are under urgent review by the Inspector General's office. Meantime, in flood-stricken Tokar City, desperate people of the Red Sea state flee with whatever possessions they have left, walking on the road, on donkeys and donkey-driven carts, with their goats and camels. Ahmed Haddab fled with his wife, his mother, aunt, and three children.
There is no food. Look at our things. There is no food. We milked about a pound of milk from our goat and added a pound of water to it.
While some people try resting under makeshift tents, trucks and bulldozers try filling the muddy road with sand to get families out who are stranded in Tokar. Road worker Al Noor says crews have been working for days since the floods began as families suffer and can't find food.
The floods were strong, and the families inside are suffering. There are deaths and bodies that we want to get out, but there is no road. We have 10 machines working, but they have stopped because of the mud on the street, and they can't get out. We are working on filling the street so that we can enter Tokar. The situation is very, very catastrophic.
People do what they can to save one another. Ahmed Haddab says they would throw ropes to people to try to save them from the water.
The flood in Tokar works like this, taking away things and people. We throw people a rope and tie them from their arms and drag them. The people of Tokar are very tired. The flood took away our corn and flour. It took away my two goats and my donkey.
Another man says people who have died have yet to be buried, and more people are missing. Some 118,000 people have been displaced nationwide and more than 300,000 affected across the country as the floods destroyed homes and could spread diseases, including cholera. Sudan's dams, roads, and bridges were already in disrepair before the war between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid forces, which began in April of 2023. Both sides have since funneled the bulk of their resources into the conflict, leaving infrastructure badly neglected. Sudan is also fighting severe hunger all over the country, and the World Food Program, now conducting an investigation of fraud, needs at least $23 billion to feed millions of people, with more than a million in Sudan alone. Philip Alexio, VOA News.
Still on Sudan, Human Rights Watch is calling on leaders of the armed conflict in Sudan to put an end to abuses allegedly committed by their forces. Latia Badr, Human Rights Watch Deputy Director for Africa, says the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces and their affiliate fighters allegedly committed war crimes.
Some of the most horrific findings is actually for this research, we relied on videos in which the perpetrators themselves are filming themselves committing what are blatant war crimes. And it highlights almost 500 days into this conflict that forces on the ground are not feeling any risk, any consequences for the crimes they're committing.
Talk to me about the areas where these abuses have been committed. I mean, Sudan has access issues. Which areas are you talking about?
We basically found visual evidence, so from these videos, from many different parts of the country, which is again highlighting this isn't one incident under one particular unit or in the context of one particular battle or fight. We found evidence of this happening in Khartoum, a horrific case in which three detainees that were blindfolded, shirtless, who actually appeared to be underage children, were forced into a pit by Sudanese armed forces and then were repeatedly shot. We found evidence of executions by the rapid support forces in the Kordofan. So this is really happening in many different places. And again, highlights what we're talking about here is an issue of command and control where those responsible for these forces are clearly not making clear that this sort of behavior is prohibited, because it is. The rapid support forces actually have a code of conduct, for example, which prohibits the mistreatment of detainees. But it's very clear what's on paper is not being implemented and enforced on the ground. And there are also no consequences for this sort of behavior.
Talk to me about some of your efforts. It's difficult to get the spokesperson of the Sudan Armed Forces, and RSF has not been responding to requests for comments. Talk to us about your efforts reaching these two groups.
We shared our preliminary findings with both and have not received a response from either. Earlier over the summer, we published a big report looking into widespread sexual violence, primarily by the rapid support forces in the capital, Khartoum. And at the time, the rapid support forces had actually replied to us, sent us a lot of documentation, their code of conduct, their rules of engagement. There were concerns there, I mean, in sense that on paper they made commitments in terms of committing to not mistreating detainees, for example. There were concerns even with the commitments themselves. But what's very clear is the implementation and enforcement. And so this is where we are calling on international actors and notably the mediators who have been trying to organize talks between the parties in Geneva, for example, not to take these commitments at face value, but to make sure that there are mechanisms to monitor the enforcement of these commitments, but also that we start seeing consequences, because the behavior is not changing. These are forces who for years, even decades, have been committing heinous crimes and have been getting away with it.
The ICC has been on record warning the warring parties in Sudan to respect international humanitarian laws Any recommendations here for such groups?
So the International Criminal Court is obviously investigating abuses in Darfur. They have said very early on in this conflict that they would be investigating new crimes committed in Darfur since this conflict has started. But what is important, of course, is investigations throughout the country. Now, there is an international fact-finding mission, which was established last year by the Human Rights Council, and its mandate is up for renewal in September. And so here we're obviously calling on states who are members of the Human Rights Council to make sure that the fact-finding mission is renewed.
People might question the authenticity of some of this evidence that are coming out of areas in Sudan. Is there any way your group is able to verify these evidences?
We have documented all sorts of violations since the beginning of the conflict in West Darfur, where we had spoken to hundreds of direct witnesses to the abuses. More recently, our reporting on sexual violence, we were speaking directly to service providers who are providing services and support to survivors of sexual violence. This report takes a slightly new approach and methodology, focusing primarily on visual evidence. Now, in the report, we make clear that we actually have many more videos, but were not able to either corroborate or geolocate or really do a deep dive into them. And so we did not include those findings in the reporting. But the ones we have included, we have cross-checked, corroborated locations, also listening to what was said in the videos as the perpetrators are accusing individuals of certain things, the way they taught them, that the accusations they make against them, which basically provide a really full picture of the scale of the abuses of what we're seeing before our eyes.
That's Latia Bader, Human Rights Watch Deputy Director for Africa. She spoke to me via telephone from New York earlier today. The president of the Federation of South Sudan Electronic Sports just returned from Morocco last week, where he participated in a meeting to discuss the development of digital sports in Africa. Tong Deng Anei says South Sudan is ready to take part in regional and global electronic sports.
Africans came up in 2023 in Morocco, and they registered an organization called African Confederation of Digital Sports. It is like a CAF, which is at the football side. So that organization was registered in Africa. All the 51 countries of Africa, including South Sudan, came and they attended that General Assembly and they did the registration. So it was launched last year in Morocco in 2023, and now it is functioning. And all those countries in Africa, they are all from the digital sport. That now there is called e-sport. It is called e-sport. Like the one we have in South Sudan is called South Sudan Electronic Sport Federation.
This organization is going to be using or depending on internet for its operation, because digital sports is to do with computer games, and internet penetration in South Sudan is very, very minimal. In fact, a lot of ITC experts say internet is the tool of the elite in South Sudan. How are you going to enhance the introduction of digital sports in South Sudan, in a country where it's difficult to even stay online for 1 minute?
That is a challenge, and I can say we can take that challenge just like everybody else has taken that challenge, because that is a challenge that people can play. But what I can tell you about this, people can play. The only thing that we cannot do is to play in the competition. The competition needs a very strong sport. And that actually is not only facing South Sudan, but it is also facing so many countries in Africa. Like when sometimes last year, there was a competition that was going on, the FIBA competition. And all the African countries who were qualified had to look at Dubai to go and play there, because they don't have a strong internet in the continent. I mean, a strong server that can hold the digital sport. But playing regionally here is okay. The internet we have is very okay. The only change that we have is very expensive. But the good advantage that we have, the young people, most of the young people that we are actually playing digital sports for South Sudan, more of them are in Kenya, and they have access to internet. Just like the people of the basketball, where a lot of them are in the U.S., and they come when they are playing for the country, they come all together and they do that.
It's okay to, you know, make use of South Sudanese who are in the diaspora, but the flip side of it is that we are ignoring the local talents at home. You gave an example of the basketball team that are all in U.S., U.K., Canada, and Australia. They represented us well at the Olympics in France. But after that, they all left.
We have to start with people who are ready, and then we establish a system that will actually now be used by the local people. So locally here, what actually you are planning to do is to get a playing room where the people will be playing there.
Your role as the president of the e-sports in South Sudan is to, you know, advocate for affordable internet in the country, because if you are going to depend on ICT for the mainstay of the players, it's an open secret that the telephone-based internet in South Sudan is quite expensive, and there are very few people who can afford. What are you doing to beat down these prices?
No, actually, what we are doing, as I mentioned to you, we are actually working now to establish a center where the youth will be playing. We'll put the internet there, and that internet will be used by the youth free. They will use it free so that they can be able now to participate there, because that internet, the population will be paying for it. Because now that the people, the youth cannot afford to pay for the internet. And the best thing we can do is to have an office where there is a strong playing room where all the youth, and we buy all the equipment, put them there, and it will be a great platform for the youth to play there.
You said it well, that it's better to start from somewhere than to wait. But most of these projects are only Juba-focused. Do you have plans to expand this to the other states, especially where cattle rustling is the main preoccupation of young people?
From Juba, we will expand to form the federation, the association at the state level. The federation will be linked to the national federation. We will be working with us, and those people, when we have actually the resources, we will expand. The challenge we have is that is not that we don't have the opportunity at the state and county level. We have the opportunity, but the challenge that we have are the resources.
That's Tong Deng Ani, president of the Federation of South Sudan Electronic Sports, or eSports. He spoke to me from Juba earlier today. We apologize for the poor audio quality of the MTN telephone line from South Sudan's capital. That's all we had for you on our menu for this Thursday, August 29, 2024. We now leave you with Aisha by Khalid. J'ai dit Aïcha, prends tout, t'es pour toi. Voici les perles, les bijoux. Aussi au retour de ton cou. Les fruits bien mûrs au goût de miel. Ma vie, Aïcha, si tu m'aimes. We have been listening to Khalid and the song Aisha. Don't forget to visit www.voaafrica.com for updates on our programs. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bill Bass, We thank you for taking your time to listen to us and wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.